It doesn't take a genius.
Ramsey!
Marshall, the beginnings of these are always so fun because we have no idea how we're going to actually start and say, okay, we're recording now. So we both try to smile and see what happens.
Here we are. Well, the best part is people think we have a very detailed script.
Right.
No. If they've listened to more than one episode, they should be firmly aware that, yeah, there is no script. There is no practice. If you think about it, what we've never told people is this is essentially live.
Right. We never... Sometimes we have an outline that we loosely use, and that's about as good as it gets.
Yes, but we never do practice. Retakes, and we never reshoot. So yeah, you're basically, you know, whenever you hear this or listen to this, or that's redundant, would be this is live. This is how it really happened without fancy production value. All right, so very exciting. We're at part three of our three-part series.
The Lost Tools of Business.
The Lost Tools of Business. Dun, dun, dun.
I know.
All right, so bring the audience up to speed and make them salivate to go back and listen to part one and two. Have they not done so?
Yeah, if you want to think of these as three sets of skills performed sequentially, we've done them completely out of order.
Brilliant.
It's part of my chaotic method. We started talking about what the ancients would have called rhetoric, and it was the bundles of skills associated with our persuasion and having influence, and it's about communicating well. And so we talked about how that applies in the modern world just as much as it applied in the ancient world, obviously. Then we went back to talk about sort of the beginning of perhaps this whole process, and that's grammar is what the ancients would have called it. But it's really about getting organized in what you know and having your knowledge base secure. So for HipSocket, we talk about growing more organized in your knowledge and growing more influential in the wisdom that you use with those around you, be your employees or your customers or whoever. So those are the first two that we talked about.
Brilliant. Yeah. And we got some feedback that those were powerful. And so now you get to part three, and the goal for part three is to tie this all together. So we've got all these wonderful concepts. Individually, they're very powerful. Yeah. Tied together, I have the sense that they're going to be even more influential in practice in today's world. So right. Where are we at here?
Well, this is the one that sort of put me down a path of having a company I called HipSocket and talking about not just growing more organized and so on, but wrestling and growing more organized, confident, and influential. So today we're talking about what the ancients would have called dialectic. Mm-hmm. Let me back into that, though, by bringing it to the real world. And I've got a blog post up about this as well. But Google, I think this was like 2016, had an internal research project they did called Project Oxygen. And they basically looked at all their high performers and looked at all their data. And of course, they're a technology company and they have lots of data and they're very scientific about how they approach things. And they wanted to know, what were the things that those folks had in common that were most likely to be a part of those high performers. And it turns out technology and the science, technology, engineering, math, the STEM stuff was basically 8th out of 8 on the list. It wasn't the technology stuff that made the difference. It was actually really soft skills. It was the soft skills. And some of that was about communicating. It was about the rhetoric that we've already talked about. But a lot of it was about like right thinking. That's maybe a made up word that I just used. But things like problem solving, things like what we'd call critical thinking, things like having insights into other people's points of view, things like making connections between different things that were complex and don't seem to be associated, but they figure out ways to make connections. Those were the kinds of things that made you really attractive to Google. and that's on all dialectic.
Well, and we, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the Chick-fil-A model of the three C's, the character and the chemistry and the competency.
Yeah.
And the character and chemistry are those things that you just show up with. They can't be trained. But I can teach you to do, in this case, the STEM work. I can teach you to write code and analyze data and things like that. And so these first two things become of paramount importance, whether or not the employee succeeds and can succeed as a contributing team member.
100%. And again, the ancients did it that way as well. You know, you mastered these seven liberal arts, and then you were allowed to go on and study, you know, medicine or, you know, theology, ultimately philosophy and theology. You couldn't do that until you had these seven arts down, because you needed to know how to think. You needed to know how to communicate.
Well, think about how important that would be. You know, we run into, you know, you think about the medical profession. So you've got nurses who are burnt out and they're quitting, and they, you know, you hear so much feedback about how the work environment is so stressful and non-productive, and a lot of it stems from doctors.
Yeah.
The doctors don't seem to be empathetic. They make demands of these folks, and so yeah, if your doctor had to go through, you know, and learn these liberal arts before they could even think about becoming, you know, proficient as a physician.
Right.
Man, how much would that change the world?
100%. And, you know, full disclosure, we're not going to talk about it here, but a lot of this could be seen as work on helping people become more virtuous. That's a whole nother discussion. That's not what I'm, you know, going to focus on today. But I did want to talk about sort of what dialectic is and what it might look like.
Yes, yes. Because I know that when I go to the eye doctor, she dialectics my eyes.
Oh, that's, oh dear.
Oh yeah. I look like a Precious Moments doll, you know, for about 6 hours. I have a feeling that's not what you mean.
I don't think so, but now I want to go back and look at that word and see what the root might be. No, dialectic, you know, comes from the same root as dialogue, and it is about sort of a conversation. It might be a conversation you have with yourself. But the idea is that it's not a conversation for conversation's sake. It's not a conversation where I'm just going to transmit something to you one way and make sure I get that communicated to you. This is really about the wrestling. It's wrestling to get to the truth of a matter. You know, Patrick Lencioni talks about a really good team has passionate, unfiltered debate. Mm-hmm. And it's debate about the issues. It's not debate about the person. You know, it's not personal attacks. It's like, we're going to hardcore have a disagreement about this thing until we figure out what's really true about this topic. That's the kind of thing we're talking about here. That would be an example of a dialectic, wrestling to the truth. It's a conscious way of thinking. It's making sure you're very consciously going through everything you can to really get to the core of what's really true here.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I worked with a group one time, and they were incredible team oriented and could talk to me. And one of their sayings was, "Sacred cows make great steaks."
Oh, I love that.
You know, they weren't afraid, no matter whose idea it was, or, you know, if it was the boss's favorite idea. It didn't matter. If it wasn't working, it had to be talked about, and we had to figure out how to make it work.
That's great. And a lot of this is going to be, we're going to come together, but we're going to come together in tension. You know, that's why the wrestling metaphor makes so much sense. But, you know, because two wrestlers, you know, opposing each other and gripped and locked in their grip, you know, that's uncomfortable, first off, but it's that tension in the opposition that's going to help us figure out what's really going on here and what's really at the core of truth in this, whatever it is we're talking about, a problem we need to solve, or, you know, a market we're trying to understand, or a product we're trying to clarify.
That's amazing. So I got the sense, it's my perception, that there are some tools, maybe some things, some techniques, dare I say, that allows us to move through this process.
Yeah. I really fought this for a long time, trying to crystallize this into a 20-minute podcast, you know, a good solid chunk of Western civilization for millennia. And I thought that, you know, the most useful thing we could do is basically sort of give three broad descriptions for what this could look like. And there are some tools and some sort of word pictures and quotes to go along with these three things that I've identified. So I'm going to take a stab at it, Mike, and I am, you know, counting on you live to make sense of what I'm about to throw at you.
Well, if Mel Brooks can do the History of the World Part One in less than 2 hours, right. I'm sure you got this.
Yeah. Well, I anyway, so I'll throw the first one at you and we can talk about this. But the first thing is, I think it's worth noting that this will probably look very messy. So a dialectic is going to be messy. Socrates said, you know, something to the effect of, I know that I do not know. You know, he was a philosopher. We talked about this in a previous episode. He wasn't a sophist. He didn't claim to be a wise man who went around helping you be wise. He was a philosopher, a lover of wisdom. He loved wisdom. He didn't claim to be the smartest guy in the room. He just had a lot of questions and really didn't give up on those questions and was kind of humble and curious about them. So here's one of the things that might happen is you don't come to a conclusion the first pass you take at this thing, which is super uncomfortable, right? Like, oh no, we need to have resolution in this meeting and have this make sense. Well, look, if you could resolve it in that meeting, it probably could have been the email, right? We talk about it could have been an email. Right. And we've learned through the pandemic how many things could have been an email because they are now emails. Mm. These dialectic discussions are the things where, no, this is important. This is worth wrestling with. So we may have to go away and think about it a little bit longer and come back and wrestle some more because we don't know. If we knew, we'd just go ahead and make a decision. It's going to be messy.
Well, and I think in today's world where everybody wants fast, fast, quick, quick.
Yeah.
You know, this is uncomfortable.
Super.
And some people would even say, you know, it's inefficient. It's a waste of time. But to me, what is truly a waste of time is when you rush the decision, you rush the conclusion, and then you go out and act upon that. You spend money and time and resources and dedicate people to something that truly wasn't going to actually solve the problem or create the outcome that you were looking for. That's the waste of time.
Yeah.
So getting people to understand that this is, I would look at it as an investment. If you're willing to invest the time now, and it may take multiple meetings and it may get uncomfortable, if we invest that properly, then this should return dividends for as long as this project goes on. So it could be a lifetime of dividends if we get it right.
Anybody in sales knows if you're decent at sales, you know, it's often putting yourself out there and risking getting rejection, right? And I think in a similar way, managers need to get really comfortable with being vulnerable enough to say, I don't have the answer either. Let's talk about this. And if nothing else, the opportunity for creating buy-in with his people or her people is monstrous here because, you know, like you said, there are so many times that the managers sit in a closed door, come up with their brilliant plan, but they've never gotten feedback and input from the folks who will actually have to implement this bad boy. And there is no buy-in and they haven't thought it out. Dialectic helps you get around that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's only the frontline people who understand what the unintended consequences are going to be. And exactly. They have conversations about, they go, do they not know that when you do this, this part over here falls apart?
Right.
You know, they're just flabbergasted that anybody could do this. You know, as you see that, I've watched a few episodes of Undercover Boss.
Yeah.
And that's always, they're out in the store, you know, they're the corporate CEO and they're out in one of their stores and decisions that they've made in the ivory tower. I guess we can say that because it's endangered. I don't know. we've been canceled. So those decisions, they see the actual consequence of them and what it does to the customer experience or profitability or the morale of the, and they always go, when we were sitting around the boardroom table, this is not what we imagined.
We didn't intend this.
Yeah, this is not working right. You know, and so, right. So yeah, if you're not taking in the perspective of a whole bunch of people, yeah, really bad decisions can be made.
It's just, you know, to summarize this, when I say messy, it's about humility and it's about curiosity and just continuing to pursue even when it's a little uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. So if we're going to get this broad perspective,
yeah,
what does that look like?
So broad is the second word. And when I say broad, it's really going to reflect a lot of what we talked about in our bit on rhetoric and about getting, you know, to where you're growing your influence. Remember that rhetoric has these different canons, these different parts of sort of the rhetorical process before you can go communicate with people. And it really starts with what they call invention, not as in making something up, but invention as in taking an inventory of everything you know about this thing. Mm-hmm. And so the canon of invention becomes really handy as you're going through this dialectic process. So long story short, there are five or so topics, not as in subjects, but topics as in think topographical map. You're going to go to all heights and depths of this topic and look at it from all sorts of different angles. And what the common topics are really questions. It's just really asking the right questions. And a lot of these questions, and I'll try to put a handout up on the website that we can link to so people can sort of get a handle of what we're talking about here. But a lot of these questions are going to revolve around, you know, defining what you're talking about, defining the terms, for instance. It's going to revolve around the relationships between two different aspects of this thing that you're talking about, maybe like a cause and effect that might be going on. You're just asking the right questions from every point of view, every angle that you can think of, every topographical layer that you can think of to try to get a bead on what's really going on. The broader you go, the better off you are.
That makes perfect sense. And we talk about this when we talk about DISC, the behavioral styles assessment. Right. Right. And we know that the DISC is the D's, the I's, the S's, and C's. And we know that if we're missing one category in our team, maybe we have a team and they don't have any S's, right. This team has what we call a blind spot.
Right.
And so the team has a blind spot. They're going to go make a decision without taking into account certain factors that could change, you know, what this decision ultimately becomes and or alienate a group of people that are in their organization. So just the absence of certain perspectives allows us or increases the statistical likelihood that we're going to miss something.
This is why I love doing this live, because I had never made that connection. There's a connection. We're having a dialectic right now, and you just made a connection. And here's what's hilarious is, you know, you've probably seen DISC questions to help you solve a problem. And there's a set of questions for each of the four DISC personality types, which, by the way, is an ancient way of looking at personalities called the temperaments. So I have taken a team through all four sets of questions, you know, sort of hitting something from each of those categories to make sure we covered a particular problem we were trying to solve in a well-rounded way. I have also done the same thing using these five common topics areas that are part of the ancient rhetorical tradition and have had the same effect. You know, just a really tough problem that a team was trying to solve. And let's see if I can pick out some good, strong questions from each of these five rough areas. And it accomplished the same thing. You're trying to just get a holistic approach and really get a whole view of the thing and not just individual parts atomized down to the you know, the nth degree. You're trying to get the big picture here in some of these questions that you ask.
Well, as you're talking, I'm thinking about meetings that I've been to or tried to facilitate, and and where you had somebody who was completely dominant, whether it was through their role or through their personality or through knowledge, and they would dominate the conversation, the dialect, and then ultimately some people's voices wouldn't be heard, and we would make a decision that that immediately caused a meeting after the meeting.
Right.
Yeah. So we made a decision, and it's only in the hallway do the people finally speak up that have a different and maybe even better point of view.
Yeah.
Which we never got to hear because we weren't doing what you talked about, which is being intentional about gathering all perspectives and having questions that would best pull that out of people so that we could get it on the table to have a nice dialogue about it.
And if you're that guy or gal, quick tip, see if you can have a meeting where all you do to contribute is ask questions. You know, force yourself to shut up and only do things that come from a place of curiosity and trying to learn as much as you can. It will change the tone of that meeting in ways you can't even imagine if you've never tried that before. Mm-hmm. It's very tough to do, but it's worth a try.
Well, and let's put in a disclaimer here. That does not mean be the devil's advocate.
Right.
Yeah. Whatever they say, I'm going to bring up the opposite. Like, that's no, that's not helpful. That. So there's a difference between, genuine curiosity, asking questions to make people think deeper, and just taking the opposite approach just because you want to and you enjoy that kind of, frustration in a group setting.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Right.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Now let's move on to something productive. Yeah. So that brings us to, all right. So if we get to what we believe is the core, we believe is the real issue, the real solution, the real problem. All right. What do we have to do at this point?
So now, if we've been willing to be messy and we've tried to be as broad as possible, and we think we're zeroing in on this, the final word that I'd inject into this is that dialectic is going to look ruthless. Mm-hmm. We're not going to dodge any bullets here. We're going to kill any sacred cows that we see that need to be killed, to use your language. Mm-hmm. The non-essentials, right? If it's not essentially a part of this thing that we think we've figured out, this problem in the market, this product we're trying to launch, this program that we, an initiative that we think is a big deal. If we keep asking hard questions about that, we're going to zero in on what's really essentially a part of that truth. That may sound really abstract, but let me give a couple different perspectives here. One is a quote from Pascal, and Pascal said, I'm going to butcher the quote, but I think he said, to deny, to believe, and to doubt are to a man what running is to a horse, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. We are wired to do this. And so, this is something that we need to do when we're trying to make, decisions about things. And you can't make decisions until you are kind of confident in what you know about them. So now's your time to really attack this and make sure that what we're building everything on is a good bedrock. Go ahead and do some denial and some doubting to make sure you've got this right.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about meeting ground rules. So
yeah,
having ground rules for the meeting.
Yeah.
And making sure that that's one of, there are no bad ideas. There's no meeting after the meeting. It has to be said in the room. These ground rules that encourage and that we commit to in order to have the type of conversation that you're talking about.
100%. And in the Middle Ages, they actually took dialectic out of this whole liberal arts process and inserted instead logic. And at the time, that made a lot of sense because they felt like they knew the truth, and logic was, sort of helping you formally make sure you were on what was true. But dialectic is a little messier than that, as we've discussed, and it's for when you're not really sure you know the truth. And I would argue that's more prevalent today, right? You know, with the military has this phrase VUCA that spilled over into the business world, and I never can remember all of them, but volatile, uncertain, you know, it's words like that that describe the kind of world we live in now, where we're just not sure, you know, what do you believe on social media? What do you know that you actually trust as an information source? And so here's us really pecking away at what, you know, what we think we know and determining, is it just a belief or is it actually something that's a bedrock truth that we can build whatever it is we're trying to build on top of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I've seen this in one-on-one coaching. I've seen it in group settings, and it's our job to challenge that.
Yes.
So somebody throws out what they believe is a truth.
Right.
And it's our job to challenge that, to see if they can explain it better, if they can defend it. And ultimately, if they may find themselves punching holes in something that just a few minutes ago they thought was ironclad.
Yeah, 100%. Let me give you a quick example. I had a client who wanted to talk about being more assertive. And, you know, I, it was a little messy, right? Because I wasn't sure what he meant by assertive. So I'm going to be humble enough to be messy here and say, what do you mean by assertive? And that was the first question. And that really caused a pause and a chance for thinking. And it turns out it wasn't about assertive. That wasn't really essentially the core issue. It was this other thing that had to do with conflict and how do you handle conflict. So, and how do you, you know, how are you perceived and things like that. So just asking these basic questions, you know, that was, I guess that, you know, now that I think of it, that really was a messy, ruthless, and broad question, because I was asking one of the common topics and saying, define the thing you're talking about, because I didn't understand it. So it was messy. Even I didn't know what we were talking about yet, but it ended up being ruthless because it zeroed him in on the one thing that really was what he needed to talk about. So I love how this stuff works, and it's always, always, always better in conversation. You can have a dialectic with yourself, and that's a healthy thing to be consciously thinking. But it's just so fun to do it the way we're doing it. And Plato would agree. I think we've talked about this before, that, you know, he felt like, don't worry about reading a book and feeling like you can teach my process, because the only way you're going to get it is in conversation. A spark from me goes to the next person and lights their soul on fire, something along those lines. I think that's kind of what we're talking about here, is let's share a spark with each other.
Oh, definitely. Well, and I find that comes through in a visible way when I'll have a coaching conversation with a client, and I'm making a few notes, and we're talking, and ideas are being sparked, and they're making a few notes. And then I always find it fascinating to just ask, so what did you write down?
Yeah.
And there's all these ideas and thoughts that
you had no idea about.
Yeah, it looks like, yeah, we took notes on two different conversations.
Right.
This doesn't seem right. So yeah, but there was, yeah, this was causing ideas to be rethought and ideas to start to congeal and come together. And yeah, it's just amazing. So yeah, we don't always know what's in somebody else's head, even though we're speaking the same language. Well, we're speaking the same words. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all right. So how do we put a bow on part three?
Well, I just want to really emphasize that this is sort of the middle section. You take the knowledge that you had, and you're not going to have understanding of that knowledge until you do the dialectic. Once you've done the dialectic, then you can move on and communicate it and have some rhetoric, have some influence, you know, share your wisdom. But somewhere in there, there's going to have to be a wrestle. Plato in the Republic says something about that your mind's eye is stuck in a bog, and dialectic just gently lifts it out. And so your mind's eye should not be in a bog after you've gone through dialectic, but it's going to start in a bog. It's going to be a nasty, messy wrestle, and have fun with that.
Yes, I'm picturing this mud-covered eyeball, and we rinse it off with some clean dialectic.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yes.
Oh, you're dilating. I see what you're doing there.
Yeah, I brought it all the way back to the eyeball.
I quit. I just absolutely quit.
Well, let's see if my announcer noticed our awesomeness and has something special to say.
I doubt it.
I doubt it too.
And there you have it, another session of Contemporaneous Extemporizing from Mark and Mike. I know it's redundant, but consider who we're talking about. As always, feel free to share the ideas you heard here. No rights are reserved, no permissions needed. Thanks. See you next time on It Doesn't Take a Genius.
That's good enough.